The Hard Shoulder.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range. Celebrating 100 years of passion for the road. Recharge your soul.
Now, many British Airways premium flyers will be unhappy from this week as their Club Europe members will now not have an English breakfast as part of their food options. Instead, they're going to get a continental breakfast, and this will affect routes from Dublin and Belfast to Heathrow. And it got us thinking about airplane foods, and do you really care about what you are offered on a flight? And does plane food really taste so different in the air as it does on the ground? Well, Professor Charles Spence is an experimental psychologist at the University of Oxford, and he joins me now to explain. You're very welcome to the programme. Professor, first and foremost, would you lament the loss of the English breakfast, or as I would call it, the good Ulster fry?
Not too much. I think that something is being lost, but I guess there are a few of us who found those airline breakfasts very pleasant to eat, a pale shadow of what they taste like on the ground. So perhaps time for a change for something that's better designed to be eaten in the air.
Which apparently is a piece of pastry and a little bit of fruit. So tell us, first of all, how is plain food prepared?
Well, it has to be prepared in advance and at scale, and there are problems about reheating and food getting very dry, which is why so often many of the main meals are sort of covered in sauce to try and keep them a little bit moist. Then when you think about all the allergies and such like that you have to deal with, it's a real challenge to deliver something that's going to taste great, especially when the research shows that you need to add 20 to 30% more sugar and salt to an airline meal to make it taste the same up in the air as it does down on the ground. That's got to be very unhealthy for all of us to have so much salt and sugar.
So the food has to be, as you say, made, packed, then blast chilled, refrigerated, and possibly the worst part, surviving the reheating up in the air. But there are other factors, I presume, that impact our taste buds in the air that also lead to difficulties.
That's right. There's sort of three things that people think about. One is the dry cabin air pressure, much drier than you'd normally find on the ground. It's also a lower cabin air pressure than you'd find down at sea level, so equivalent to what you'd get at 5,000 to 6,000 feet above sea level. And the third factor I think that's really important but often neglected is the engine noise, which comes in at normally about 80 to 85 decibels of engine noise, depending on where you're sitting. And that, bizarrely, suppresses our ability. It's part of why we had to have more sugar and salt. But at the same time, it also explains this sort of aeroplane food and drink mystery, which is why there are 25% of people who fly who will only ever drink a Bloody Mary or a tomato juice when they are in the air and never do so when they're on the ground. And you think, you know, if you like a Bloody Mary, you like it wherever you are. It shouldn't really matter if you're up there or down here. But in fact, no, many people only drink the Bloody Marys in the sky. And the research shows that that's because of the sound of the engine noise, which does suppress our ability to taste the sweet and salt. We have to add so much more. But mysteriously, it actually enhances the mysterious fifth taste of umami, which is what you find in tomatoes, in Parmesan cheese, in mushrooms, and also in the Worcestershire sauce, that you would add to make your Bloody Mary. So it's almost as if people are sort of self-medicating in the air to have a drink that will stand up to the dry air, the lower cabin air pressure, and the loud background noise.
This is absolutely fascinating. I never in all my days and all of my flights, and I must admit, I've never had a Bloody Mary. I'm neither a fan in the air nor on the ground, but I have never looked at my little bottle of Prosecco or my gin and tonic. And when I am in the air as a nervous flyer and wondered why it is that it just tastes so perfect. Explain to me a bit more about that background engine noise that you say is somewhere between 80 and 85 decibels. How is that actually impacting our taste?
Yeah, the actual sort of the mechanism in the brain, well, I'm still not quite sure about, just the fact of the matter repeatedly demonstrated now, that it does that sort of mask our ability to taste some tastes like sweet and salty, but it actually enhances the taste of umami. So in a way, it's kind of like a what I might call a sonic seasoning for umami. sort of dialing up our ability to taste that fifth proteinaceous taste. And maybe if you want a just-so story about why that might be, is that maybe, you know, loud sounds are associated in our evolutionary past with, you know, the tigers and the woolly mammoths and such life that might be chasing us away. And so whenever we hear a really loud sound, we get stressed, as we are anyway in the air. And the best way to perhaps deal with a response to that stress is to consume something that has the protein that might support our escape.
So if I wore noise-cancelling headphones on a flight, would that actually improve the taste of the food or indeed the Bloody Mary?
Absolutely. It would certainly improve the taste of most food and drink because those noise-cancelling headphones are particularly good at cancelling the repetitive sound of the engines whirring away. Back in 2014, we actually worked with British Airways to come up with a sonic seasoning menu for the long-haul passengers up at the pointy end of the plane who could dial into their headset, put their noise-cancelling headphones on, and we had music that matched the taste. So we had the Pretenders to go with some Loch Fyne salmon. We had Louis Armstrong, who's a very low-pitched voice. It was designed to bring out the bitterness in a chocolate cake that was being served at the time. And so this is really kind of a futuristic way to both damp out the background noise that's suppressing sweet and salty from the engines while using music to dial up those tastes that you really want to accentuate and that you enjoy in whatever you happen to be eating or drinking.
Oh, I'm feeling a bit sorry for myself now. My limp cheese toasty and warm gin and tonic at the very back of the plane. I take it you're talking about the people who go into the plane and turn left and not right.
Yes, those are the ones. Those are the ones.
So there are therefore spicy or aromatic foods that will feel and will taste better on air. And are airlines in general conscious of that when they're putting together their food offering for the rest of us passengers who are at the back of the plane?
For some of them, they are. So I say, you know, we should really get rid of the salt and sachet that you might find in your little plastic tray, because that's, you know, we should all be consuming less salt. And instead, we should have umami shake, the thing that makes the tomato juice and Bloody Marys taste so good. Sometimes it's called, you know, fifth taste mix or fifth taste shake. And you can buy it. This is the powder. And I think you should have that because that's the best way to enhance the taste of things.
Okay, well, let's go back to British Airways for a moment. Is a cold continental breakfast, your pastry and your little bag of fruit, arguably better suited to eating in the air than your fry?
Well, the fruit's got to be probably healthier than a donut or something. And the pastry, it's going to be very hard, I think, to get it sort of suitably fresh. Probably not as savoury as perhaps the old cooked breakfast might have been.
All right. Professor Charles Spence, that has been a fascinating conversation and not one that I have considered before. So thank you for taking the time to speak to us. I will be bringing my umami sash with me onto my next flight to London.
The Hard Shoulder. With the MG Hybrid and Electric range. Celebrating 100 years of passion for the road. Recharge your soul.